When I'm a kid, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, and I'm cheering for these guys on TV in World Series games, and then you fast forward to your career later in life, and you're working with the Kent Herbecks of the world, and you know, Tom Bernanskis of the world, and in fact, Kent Herbeck's daughter interned for me, and it's just like, wait a minute, man, I had your poster on my wall, like it's crazy. But there was a time, I don't know, it was 3, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe. It was the final series on the road. We were in Detroit, and it was I think optional hitting that day, and I was kind of lurking around the cage. Bernanski looks at me and says, "Get in here, get in the cage." And I'm like, all right, I'll show you what I can do. You know, as the further away you get from your high school days, the better you were as a player. And I was embellishing a little bit of my career at that time. And Bruno's like, "Let's see what you can do." And so I got Tom Bernanski, Terry Steinbach, and Paul Molitor in the cage, you know, kind of watching me. And I'm like, before Bruno throws the first pitch, I'm like, whoa. The 12-year-old in me right now is like, this is incredible. You know, you guys are my heroes, right? And they're all like, shut up. And Bernanski throws the first pitch and just drills me in the shoulder. He says, are we good now? And I'm like, I'm done, man. I can't hit in front of you guys. But it's moments like that you just have to take a step back and realize that, you know, this game is special, and it all comes full circle. And for me, I'm very blessed to do it for my hometown team and have those deep roots with guys that I grew up cheering for and had a chance to work with and still see around the ballpark, every day. It's just sometimes you got to pinch yourself and say, this is a great opportunity, and you want to just do, you know, everything you can for this organization and for those people. And, you know, I'm grateful, but I'll never forget that day that old Bruno, I'm talking to him about his poster on my wall, and he plunks me in the shoulder and says, move on, let's go.
From Linkley, it's How I Got Here. The stories behind the youth, high school, college, and professional sports journey, where it leads, and what we learn along the way. I'm Corey Koski, and on today's show, we get a behind-the-scenes look at what it takes to get a job in baseball and what it is like working in baseball. Every year, there are over 1,000 applicants for an internship position at the Minnesota Twins. It may be harder to get an internship in baseball than actually play professional baseball. But once you get in, the work gets even harder. Long hours during the baseball season is the norm. And when the season is over, it is over. To work in baseball, you need to love baseball because you are eating, sleeping, and breathing baseball. Dustin Morris knew what he wanted, and he went for it. His path is one of tenacity and resilience. This is his story. So tell me about your home life, what it was like growing up in Lakeville, Minnesota.
Yeah, you know, homegrown right here in the state of Minnesota, and it was, you know, a great place to grow up. I'm very fond of this state and this community, and as you know, Corey, it's a sports town. I mean, there's something for everybody, and growing up, I was like every other little kid. I loved, you know, football, baseball, basketball, hockey, you know, the big four. I played, you know, golf and paid attention to really every sport there was, but I really fell in love with hockey and baseball growing up here, and it was some of those professional athletes that kind of shaped my love of the sport and really just decided at a young age that I wanted to be involved in some way. You know, playing as a kid, you think you're going to grow up and be a big leaguer or play in the NHL, and you kind of find out around you know, junior high school that, boy, there's some kids a lot better than you, and it might not be in the cards, so you might have to adjust and focus on your education and maybe a different way to get to these levels within sports that you can make an impact and make a difference. So that's kind of what I did. I had the support of my mom and dad were very into my, you know, sports career as a kid, and took me to all the events that, you know, any little kid would love to go to, the games and the autograph sessions and the Twins Fest. I mean, I really was a kid that was influenced by the Kirby Puckett's and Neil Broughton's of the world, and really couldn't get enough of it. Watched every game on TV and went to every event that I could, and again, played the sports myself, trying to put a goal in like Neil Broughton would or Mark Tenorti. Some of those old North Stars were the guys that I really loved. And like I said, those 87 and 91 Twins, really, I was a pretty influential young 8, 9-year-old that fell in love with that group. It's probably why I work in baseball now is that 87 group made me just fall in love with baseball.
So when did you stop playing sports did you play high school?
Yeah, I played baseball, hockey, and you know, golf, not really in a high school setting, through my senior year. And during that senior year, you know, you kind of get focused on what's next, and you realize that you know, maybe you could dabble with some Division III opportunities. But I visited the University of Wisconsin in Madison and fell in love with that campus and realized that, you know, I was going to cut the cord with playing and go to school and study and try to figure out how to potentially work in sports someday. So that was kind of my goal. I figured that out as a senior in high school because of my love of sports, but realized I wasn't going to be a collegiate athlete and needed to figure out what it would take to get there, you know, in a front office someday. And it was an eye-opening experience, because when you're 18, you think anything's possible. All you got to do is just, you know, pick something and then go get it. Well, you realize that it's a pretty competitive industry, really across the board, all sports. And I got through college. I enjoyed every minute there, and it really set me up, you know, for a career in sports. And, you know, we can get into a little specifics with college. I don't know where you want to go with this, but I love my time there, and it really opened my eyes up to, you know, the potential of whether it's PR, marketing, accounting, just the business side of sports. There was a lot of opportunities once you started researching what it takes to run a professional franchise.
So you're at University of UW, and you decided that you want to have a career in sport. So how does that?
Yeah, well, a little naive at the time, but I guess it was really my junior year. Started thinking, oh, this baseball, definitely baseball.
Why baseball?
You know, well, that was my passion. That really was my number one sport. That was my best sport. I really enjoyed the game, the strategy. I don't know. It was just America's pastime. For me, it was just pretty easy. My grandma loved baseball, and all my friends loved baseball. So it was one of those games that I thought really just connected generations, and kind of had my mind set that I was going to work for a team. And I remember my girlfriend at the time, and later my wife, was doing an internship in Colorado, and I was sitting in the library in Vail, Colorado. Yeah, the library. This was kind of back before you just Google things, but I was reading about professional, major league teams. I guess I was pretty particular. It was major league teams. There was, you know, only so many teams and only so many positions open, and I was learning about the departments and what maybe was the right fit for me. And you don't really realize as a college student that all the different departments that it takes to run a business. And that's what I was kind of self-educating. I mean, the University of Wisconsin was great, but back then there wasn't really a sports management class. It was more, I was zeroed in on journalism and communication. So my obvious interest was PR. And I realized that every team and every sport had a little PR agency within the front office. And that's kind of where I zeroed in on. And, you know, that summer I started writing letters to different teams, and, you know, just generic letters with a
handwritten, not
yeah,
not
yeah,
type.
Yeah. You know, I identified, did a little research, and I thought I, you know, looking back at it, I got personal addresses, you know, and addressed them to the PR directors back. Boy, this would have been late 90s, and just wanted to, you know, talk about an internship, talk about shadowing or learning how to be better in that space, and see if it was interesting to me. So,
how many responses did you get?
I think I wrote 9 letters that summer, or leading into that summer, and I was 0 for 9. I got 9 rejection letters.
Oh, so they actually responded with a rejection letter?
I would say half responded. And I remember to this day, a gentleman at the Chicago White Sox, Scott Reifert's his name, he's the VP of communications now, and he was the one that really sent back a personal letter and, you know, kind of keep grinding. You know, it's a competitive industry. Gave me some good ideas on how to position myself the following year. And I did. I took that to heart. It was a little humbling. You know, you think you can just call your shot and you're going to get a job.
Yeah.
And no, that was not the case.
So what did he tell you how should you position yourself?
You know, he kind of just, he said, build that resume up, separate yourself from your peers. You know, you kind of have to look to your right and left and realize that that's your competition. I mean, really, what are you doing to maximize your time while you're in college? So while I was there, I got involved with different, the communications department, became a research assistant, did some volunteering, took some classes a little more tailored to what I thought would help me next go around with a chance or a try at working in Major League Baseball. And it worked. That next year, it was after my senior year, I had a semester left. I wrote some letters and was advised by a few to zero in on the teams that I could envision myself working for and really supporting myself. You know, you don't get rich quick working in this sport. And at the internship level, it's, you know, usually an hourly wage, and you're more or less, it's an extension of your education. So I wrote to five teams. And had a lot more success, but I also my best friend's older brother was working on a book, and he was working on a book with the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, and he advised me, you know, you might want to contact them. It sounds like they have an internship program, or they're starting an internship program, and it's an amazing place. Mm-hmm. And you know, being a kid from Minnesota and hearing about Cooperstown, New York, it was actually the summer that Kirby Puckett mm-hmm. was going to go in the Hall, and I couldn't ignore that, so I actually wrote to the Hall, and it happened quick. Mm-hmm. It almost was like I put the other baseball teams on hold because I started talking to a few people out in Cooperstown, and it really came together. They took a chance on me. I mean, it was a phone interview and a few conversations and a few back and forth, and they invited me out to spend the summer in New York, but I did have one other opportunity. It was a internship in Philadelphia. It was kind of a combo hockey, basketball, 76ers, Flyers position that was interesting, but it was a non-paid internship. And I really wasn't in a position financially to support myself, go move to Philadelphia. Yeah. And I talked to my dad, and my dad said, wait a minute, you're contemplating turning down an opportunity to go to the Hall of Fame? He's like, are you nuts? That's where all these guys want to finish their career, and you might get a chance to start there. So he was right. I thought about it and ended up jumping in my car and driving out to Cooperstown, and it was a summer, like I said, that was going to honor Kirby Puckett and Dave Winfield, two guys right from Minnesota. So it was an opportunity that, looking back at it, it was amazing. It opened up a lot of doors for me. I soaked up as much as I could while I was there, and you know, it was a summer filled with, kind of learning the importance of baseball, the history, the tradition, the impact it has on people's lives. I mean, it was amazing. And if anybody is ever thinking about going out to Cooperstown, it's the ultimate trip. I mean, it really is. If you're a baseball nut, I mean, there's so many things you can learn about the game that you love, and they do such a great job preserving history. And we talk about connecting generations. You know, being out there, you would see a lot of families, whether it's a 5-6-year-old little one or a, you know, 90-year-old person that is interested in baseball. It just really is a way for families to connect through sport.
And so what did you do after you got that internship? Did you send out more letters, or did you have something set up kind of next?
Well, while I was in Cooperstown, you know, it was a situation where I was advised by a few people that networking was a key component to kind of navigating through whether it's, I guess, business or baseball or sports in general. So while I was in Cooperstown, a gentleman named Jeff Idelson, who's currently the president of the Hall of Fame, he gave me some sound advice, and really throughout the summer would just kind of took me under his wing and it just positioned me well to learn as much as I could while I was out there. And I did have one semester to finish at school. And during that semester, I used Jeff as a way to connect with a few other PR directors that I was well aware of who's who now in baseball. And just even, like I said, the one internship out in Cooperstown was critical because of, you know, the guys that were inducted, you know, Kirby Puckett and Winfield. You know, Winfield went in as a Padre and Kirby obviously as a Twin, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I got to meet all the Padres front office, yeah, and I got to meet all the Twins front office, and as well as Bill Mazeroski from the Pirates. So I got to meet the Pirates people as well, and Jeff and a few others helped position me to kind of, you know, make an impression, I should say. And the Twins knew I was from Minnesota. You know, they're kind of proud of their own. Yeah, yeah. So I connected with a few key people. Rob Anthony was one, who's our assistant GM now and was the PR director at the time. So I really positioned myself to try to, hey, Rob, how are you? You know, and just spent as much time as I could with him. He probably remembers it as some little annoying kid. But no, he was he was gracious and spent some time and explained, you know, how the Twins operate and the who's who. So went back to school and then kind of zeroed on those teams that I met and had a few contacts on the inside. And, you know, it was amazing because after I had the Hall of Fame on my resume and a college degree, I was 5 for 5 with interview opportunities. And it was the Twins, White Sox, Cubs, Dodgers, and Brewers. And I also learned that it's a small knit community. You know, it's a fraternity of people. So, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody. And I had this interview set up with the Twins, and I was really kind of eyeing that opportunity down. This would have been the, 2002 season. And the first interview, though, I had set up was with the Chicago Cubs. And the Cubs, it went great. It was an amazing experience in big city and a little intimidated, Wrigley Field and Sammy Sosa. And but I really just was myself. I had some people kind of advising me, you know, how to operate around the person I was interviewing with. And that's a tip that I would say, do your homework. Mm-hmm. It's important to know who you're talking with when you're talking about your future. And I got the Cubs job and they offered it to me right away. And this was before I even interviewed with the Twins or the Brewers or Dodgers. And it was a tough call, but I just ended up accepting the Cubs job and called the other teams and said, listen, out of respect, I'm going to go down this other path and gain some experience with the Cubs. So I spent the 2002 season in Chicago, and it was, you learn quickly that, you know, sports from the outside looks very glamorous, but on the inside it's long hours. It's tough times. I mean, it was a year that the Cubs really struggled. Don Baylor was the manager. He got fired. They traded away every player, Sammy Sosa. There was some drama there. But I was exposed to a lot. There was 6 major newspapers at the time. WGN was a monster. I mean, it was a heck of an experience for me. But that internship came with an expiration date. Mm-hmm. And that's tough. That's a tough pill to swallow when you're – it's almost like becoming a free agent, I suppose. But it was at the end of that season in November of 2002 that I had to look for another job. But
let's go back to this. So you're an intern through this, and there was a lot of drama through that. With you know, the whole Sammy Sosa deal and all that stuff, like how did you navigate through that?
Well, it wasn't the peak of the Sosa drama, but he was a big piece of that city and that community, and there were some ups and downs with you know, that team, and Joe Girardi was on that squad too, and there was some conflict on the inside. But you realize as a young, you know, boy at the time, I guess I was 21, you realize that, you know, you try to keep those issues in house. I mean, it's something in sports that you do kind of figure out as, you know, you were obviously a great teammate and former professional athlete that had a lot of ups and downs inside a clubhouse, that, you know, things tend to work themselves out through open communication, sometimes through some frustrating conversations. And when you're in the position that I was in PR, you're really close to the club and you're really close to the uniform personnel. You're kind of almost a shadow of the manager, and you get to see and hear a lot of things, and you learn quickly what confidentiality and trust is. And that's something that I'm grateful for, because my boss at the time, her name is Sharon Panazzo. I mean, she really let me do a lot as a young kid, and I was exposed to a lot. You don't realize it at the time, but just the experience going through it once or twice, seeing some things happen, you know, better position you for the next opportunity. So I really am grateful for that year I spent in Chicago, and even though it was a train wreck of a season for that organization, and even Andy McPhail, who's a hero here and helped navigate two world championships, was the GM at the time with the Cubs, and he stepped down that season too and handed it off to Jim Hendry. And so there was a lot of change in one year as a kid. It's my first exposure to Major League Baseball. And now keep in mind, I'm blessed to even have this opportunity. It was a very competitive internship to get that position. I a little naive, but looking back at it, if I didn't get that job, I don't know where I'd be today. So I look back at those early days with the Hall of Fame and the Cubs, and I'm just so grateful for those that took the time to teach and position and guide me to where I am today.
All right, you're a free agent now. And so how do you process that?
Well, a lot of begging to stay on with the Cubs, you know, and it's just, you know, it wasn't something that they really like to do, a second internship. They want to give an opportunity to another kid. So there was one full-time job that next year, and was with the Texas Rangers, one full-time job in PR. I mean, that's how laser-focused I was on what I wanted to do. I mean, there's 30, you know, baseball teams, and there's, you know, 30 jobs in the world that I'm maybe qualified for, and really only one of them's open. I mean, so I look back at it, and there's, you know, one job that I'm really interested in. And again, positioning myself, my network, I guess, was growing at that point, and I did learn that, you know, in PR, you travel. Yeah. So you meet a lot of the PR directors that come, you know, in each city. And John Blake was the gentleman who was, at the time, I think his title was Vice President of Communications. And he had come to Chicago on a family vacation. And I was, Sharon, my boss, asked me to take John around and give him the Wrigley tour. And I took pretty good care of him. I mean, it was, you know, one of these things I look back at on, you know, making an impression, and the likability trait, you know, is, you know, I didn't know John was going to have a job opportunity 3, 4, 5 months later, but I took the time to kind of roll out the red carpet for John and his family. And, you know, fast forward to November, December. Well, there, that one job was in Texas. It was a media relations coordinator, and I applied for it with the support from Jeff at the Hall and Sharon with the Cubs, and, positioned myself for an interview. And I remember, like yesterday, John flew to Minnesota and met me at the airport, and it was my one chance to tell him I was the guy for the job. And
so John flew to Minnesota.
Yeah, I thought that was a little different. Instead of me going to Texas, he liked to come to, I guess, each candidate's hometown. So we met at the airport, a restaurant. I remember the sun kind of glaring in my eyes, and I had a hard time making eye contact with John, and I was all nervous if he's, you know, if I'm squinting or if I'm handling myself appropriately. But John's a tough guy. If anybody knows him out there, he's not the easiest person to read. But I had a great interview with him. Just kind of talked about my passion and my hunger, my commitment to him and the Texas Rangers. And a week later, he flew me to Texas, so I got a chance to go see the ballpark there and meet the rest of the staff, and kind of a second interview, and it was something that really, really went well. And a couple days later, he offered me a job, mm-hmm. and here I am, kind of packing up and trying to transition out of Chicago, kind of in limbo. But it worked out for me, where I went from Chicago straight to Arlington, Texas, and set up shop right there by the ballpark, and hit the ground running in January of 2003.
So at what point did you get married in all this? What did you saw that? Was she still a girlfriend? Was she a fiancée at the time? Was she flying around with you, or what was your wife doing?
I'm glad you brought that up. So Megan has been my rock since high school. She grew up here in Minnesota with me, and she's chased this baseball thing kind of all over the country and supported me from day one. And going back to that John Blake interview, I actually got married between my Cubs and Rangers job opportunities. And I interviewed with John on Sunday of my wedding weekend. So it was, I had just gotten married 2 days before on that Friday. And then we had a party on that Saturday. And then Sunday morning, I'm interviewing with John Blake. And I was just hoping he wasn't going to ask about, you know, my personal life too much, because I didn't want to drop, well, I got married 2 days ago. But it was an exciting time for us, because there was so much happening. And, you know, my wife's career was taking off too, and what we want to do, where we want to live. But we were, you know, we were both Minnesota kids, but looking to explore the country. So we weren't really scared or intimidated by any opportunity. But she knew my passion and my career was kind of taken off. It wasn't really locked and loaded, but it was, you know, I'm starting to make some connections, and got the Texas job. And Megan was a trooper. We jumped in a U-Haul and just took it, took all those wedding gifts, in a U-Haul, and made it to about Arkansas. And that U-Haul, you wouldn't believe it, broke down. The engine went, and there we are.
We're in Arkansas.
It's not far from Hope, uh-huh. Arkansas. I think that's the Bill Clinton's area there. But it was just miserable, because we ended up having to move all this stuff out of a U-Haul into another U-Haul. Uh-huh. And there wasn't many people around. So it was my wife, myself, and my dad, who had a bad back. And then we had to hire two kids running around the street. We gave each $20 to help move all this stuff into a new U-Haul. But we ended up getting to Arlington and started shortly after the new year. I think it was January 2nd or 3rd of 03. And, you know, I did my homework, learned as much Texas Rangers as I possibly could. And again, you learn, you know, baseball's got a lot of superstars. And I went from the Cubs and Sammy Sosa to the Rangers with Alex Rodriguez and Michael Young and Juan Gonzalez and Rafael Palmeiro. I mean, it was a pretty fun team when you look at it on paper. And I really just kind of got, you know, started right away in January with the media guide, started writing about these players and helping the department produce that book. And I really, that's my first full-time job. I mean, that's a dream come true for a 22-year-old that, you know, kind of when I was 18 said, this is what I want to do. And 4 years later, I secured a full-time job in sports, specifically in baseball and specifically in PR. I mean, I'm flying high. I mean, this is easy, yeah, right? I got this all figured out. But
and then you lost your job.
Then I lost my job. I got about 11 months in with the Texas Rangers, and it was a great experience. Again, a bad team. It didn't go the way we wanted, but because of budget cuts, looking back at it, you don't quite understand it as a 22-year-old that just got your dream job, and then 11 months later, you get it taken away. But I lost my job. I joke about it because I wasn't making much money. And my last real duty with the Texas Rangers was to help compile why Alex Rodriguez should get the Hall or the MVP.
Yeah.
And he had I guess it was a bonus clause in his contract that should he get the MVP, I think he had a $750,000 bonus. Uh-huh. And so I was pulling. We were a last place team, yeah. So it was kind of unheard of that an MVP would be on a last place team. And you know, I'm not saying I'm the reason he got the MVP, but I certainly I jab Alex. I got a chance to tell him this story spring training this year, but he got the MVP and he got his $750,000, and I got let go because they couldn't afford me. You know, it was a budget cut. So instead of hanging my hat, you know, it's you're kind of down in the dumps, and I'm sitting there in Arlington, Texas, really in the shadows of the ballpark in Arlington, just frustrated and just upset, angry, sad, whatever those emotions you feel. But I wasn't just going to hang my head there. And my first call was to the Twins. You know, Mike Herman was a guy here that I became close with over some travels. And Sean Harlan was also in the PR department. So called those guys and just kind of made them aware of what happened. And they were very supportive. And, you know, you don't really create jobs right. for people, but just kind of a sounding board. And there was some other people that were in my corner that gave me some good advice. And Phyllis Marriage at Major League Baseball became a good friend and a mentor and somebody that I could call on for any issues that I might have. So now I'm, you know.
So what was one of the best pieces of advice you got there?
Well, use your connections and you know, get some feedback from John at the Texas. As bitter as I was at John at the time, I realized that he really had nothing to do with it because he would soon lose his job as well. They brought in a new PR director, and he was kind of pushed to the side. At the time, it was a challenging shift. When you learn in sports, you realize and you learn that there's probably a time in your career where you're going to lose a job for something out of your control, and that's something that John Daniels. He's now the general manager of the Texas Rangers. He was an up-and-comer when I was there and became a friend. And he had given me that advice that, listen, if we're going to do this and you're going to do it right, you're probably going to lose a job. You just lost it at a young age. You know, keep your head up and, you know, let us know if we can help. And, you know, I kind of zeroed in on the other 29 clubs, start making some calls, and both Phyllis and Mike Herman and a few others around the league. So the San Diego Padres were looking to expand their department because they were building a new ballpark, stretched a little thin. It might be worth a call to the Padres. And there's a gentleman named Luis Garcia, who was the PR director at the time. Well, I kind of cold called him. Yeah. And to his credit, he answered. He actually was aware of the situation and who I was. I was in the American League at the time. I wasn't traveling, so I don't think we really had any crossover at that point. But Luis definitely was interested, and to my surprise, actually said, "Yeah, we are expanding." Even though there wasn't a job posting or anything, it was really just kind of being proactive and making some phone calls. You know, not just hiding behind an email or a letter. It was like explaining my situation, selling myself, if you will. And we had set up a job interview at the winter meetings that year. The meetings were in New Orleans. And I flew down to New Orleans and set up an interview. It was a unique setting. If I don't know how many of your listeners have gone to the baseball winter meetings, but it's kind of around the clock. There's no start or stop in the day. And I think I had an interview with the Padres PR department at like midnight.
Oh, really?
In New Orleans in some ballroom. And it was a fun conversation with those guys because it was a little younger department and a brand new ballpark. It was San Diego. They really sold me as much as I think I sold them on myself. So we hit it off, kind of clicked there at the winter meetings. And
were there any hurricanes at your meeting?
No, it was.
I'm talking about the hurricane. That one bar in New Orleans where they have the hurricanes. Have you ever seen?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. But I was trying to stay pretty focused on preparing for my future versus hitting Bourbon Street, and yeah, you joke. I think they might have hit Bourbon Street a little bit and had some hurricanes in them, but it might have helped my interview process. And that's what you learn too in sports. There's different personalities, and there's different. You know, it's not your standard job. It's not a cookie cutter 9-to-5. I mean, there's some things to navigate through. Professional athletes and some egos and some crazy things you see along the way. But I guess you just learn that you adapt to who you're talking to and kind of read the room. And I fit in well with those guys. And two weeks later, they flew me to San Diego. And I'll tell you what, getting off that plane and heading to the hotel and the palm trees and sunshine and that beautiful Petco Park, I mean, I wanted that job bad. So I prepared myself and, again, kind of knew who I was interviewing with and set myself up for success and kind of knocked it out of the park. And they offered me a job pretty quickly. So I got let go from the Rangers in about November and had a job lined up with the Padres late December and started January 04 in San Diego. Loved my time there. Thought I was going to be with the Padres forever. And then my phone rang in spring training of 2006. It was the Twins. The Twins had an opportunity and asked if I was interested, kind of, you know, off
in
the record.
Spring training 2006?
Yeah, spring training 06. Sean Harlan was the PR director at the time, and he was going to shift into a Major League Video role. It was kind of the evolution of how teams were going to start using video to, you know, not only, you know, teach and kind of train your players and just educate with, you know, video, not necessarily the replay system, but just, you know, I don't know, Corey, where you were at back in those 05, 06, but it was teams are starting to ramp up how they would, you know, capture video and then players would use that video to, you know, study opposing pitchers or opposing hitters. And Sean was scheduled to kind of take that on when spring training started.
Well, that just amazes me that, you know, we roll into spring training and all of a sudden your head of your PR department is going to roll into video.
Well, I will tell you, there was a little back channeling with, you know, around Thanksgiving and Christmas. I came back to Minnesota for the holidays and met with a few key Twins people that if this happened, Terry Ryan was the general manager at the time. And, you know, they were kind of looking towards the future. And we were probably right in the middle of the pack. I mean, teams were kind of growing that area of you know, I guess just strategic advantage on how they were going to use video. But Sean was kind of identified as the guy that was going to take that on. And at the time, he was the PR director. So Mike Herman then was looking for somebody to potentially join the department, knew I was from Minnesota, kind of goes back to the whole networking. Rob Anthony knew who I was from the Hall of Fame days and kind of had some, you know, back channel discussions on, you know, potential.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of wishful thinking, you don't want to get ahead of yourself. So I kind of stayed. My commitment was with the Padres, and you know, spring training was coming. I was like, "What are the Twins going to do here?" You know, it's getting to that point where it's hard to transition, like you said, in spring training. But I had a job interview, I guess, right as camp started.
Where was the job interview?
It was actually back here in Minnesota in Eagan. It wasn't really a job interview. It was kind of I looked back and I was very blessed to kind of, they knew who I was. They did their homework on my short career at the time was, you could call on some people. And that's another tip that, your reputation and your network, you want people to be able to speak highly of you because ultimately that's what they're going to call on your references. Mm-hmm. So, that kind of all started to happen. And then the Twins did ask formal permission to interview me in 2006, but it was a little, they dragged their feet a little too long because the World Baseball Classic, it was this tournament that was launching, and my boss, Luis at the Padres, was going to leave spring training to go be the PR director for Team Mexico. And Petco Park was also hosting a round of those tournaments. So the Padres, they granted permission, but they were like, listen, we can't be shorthanded for spring training. So if this happens, we have to negotiate when the right start time is. I mean, kind of flattered now as a 24, 25 year old kid. You're like, listen, it was 2.5 short years ago. I didn't have a job. And now I've kind of got a couple teams wanting me around. So the Twins did officially offer me a job. And then I had about 3 weeks, was the kind of the, towards the end of camp, I joined the Twins. And I literally left Arizona on a Friday, drove to San Diego, packed up my cubicle, signed some paperwork, flew to Minneapolis, signed some paperwork, grabbed a laptop, and started with the Twins on Monday, and went down to Fort Myers, Florida, and started my Twins career back in March of 2006.
And your wife is driving the U-Haul back?
Interesting. My wife and I, it was kind of a, what do we do now? Yeah. She had a good job down there, and we had bought a condo. She decided to stay for 3-4 months. I was going to be in Florida for the month of March. And, kind of very busy, obviously, in April opening day. And just so she stayed in San Diego for 3-4 months and transitioned out of her role there and kind of networked for jobs in Minnesota. But she was very thrilled to end up coming back to Minnesota and be with her family. And kind of we viewed it as dropping anchor. This was probably longer term fit for us. And, I look back at it 12 seasons later, and here I am with the Minnesota Twins in 2019, and so grateful for every opportunity I've got here with the Twins.
All right, so if you look back at your career, you've worked with a lot of great managers throughout the time. Who would you say, because then I get all of them bring unique things to the table, so who would you say is kind of some of your favorite managers that you probably learned the most from?
Well, a full list of the managers. I started with Don Baylor, great man. Then when I went to Texas, it was Buck Showalter, tough, different style leader. And then, with the Padres, it was Bruce Bochy, again, just a great, fun guy to be around. And then I came to the Twins, and it was Ron Gardenhire. And I must say that Gardy is like family. Mm-hmm. He took me under his wing. He really, he's got a bark to him. Mm-hmm. You look at the highlights, cue the highlights, right? Yeah. He got kicked out of some games. Some umpires have some great stories about him. But, he was a passionate, caring person that really, he did things that the average person doesn't even understand. And there's one story I actually was talking to my wife about. There was a time when I was with the Twins just working around the clock and didn't really get to see my wife much, and he took note of that. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'll tell you what, I want to fly your wife to Seattle on this next road trip so you guys can just spend some time together. And I was like, what? And sure enough, he did that so we could have, I think there was an off day out there, and just something, heart of gold, right? Yeah. And Gardy wanted to win, and we had great teams and very successful, and that certainly helps when you're a leader. But Gardy by far was the guy that stands out as somebody that really – let me develop as a PR director and an influence within the clubhouse. And, I made some mistakes and I did some things well, and he never overly criticized me or crushed my ideas or dreams. He kind of let me be me, and he was very supportive of decisions I made and very accommodating as well. I think we made for a good team. We did a lot of things outside the box and a lot of things that I think helped shape his image. And he let me kind of get my feet wet with a lot of different things. So, we spent a long time together. And as you know, Corey, it doesn't last forever. Mm-hmm. And he was fired, 5 years ago now, I think. And in comes Paul Molitor, who's also a great person, baseball royalty, Hall of Famer. I mean, he's a guy that everybody, he walks into the room and everybody wants a piece of Paul. Yeah. I mean, and that was kind of a different thing for me. And you know, every city we went to, everybody wanted to talk to the Hall of Famer and 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. And, you know, as a first-time manager, he had obviously been in the game for, I mean, how many years? 40 years. But first-time manager, I mean, it's quite a responsibility, and it's the PR director's job to kind of be the gatekeeper on what they can do, should do, where they need to focus their time. You know, they're trying to manage a game, a team of 25 players. There's just countless things for them to be aware of and worry about. So you kind of make decisions for them and what they have time for. And Paul and I made a great team on you know, where his limits were to what he'd do and where his focus needed to be. Sometimes it was on the team, and sometimes he had more time for those interview requests and, you know, award dinners and meet and greets, all the things that come with being the face of the franchise. And, you know, you spend some time with a person, you really get to know them as a person and not just the manager of a baseball team. So there's a special connection there between staff and your manager and coaches and obviously your players as well. But the manager is one that, you know, has the most responsibility and really the most requests and most things on their plate. So there's a natural connection to just be kind of in their shadows and kind of help every step of the way. So that's kind of the group of managers I've dealt with. I get the opportunity now to work with Rocco Baldelli, another first-time manager. And an interesting thing for me, I've gone from most of these managers being like father figures to me to Rocco, who's actually younger than me. So he feels more like a brother, and I think we're going to have some fun. He's got some different ways of looking at things, and even though we're relatively new at building this, you know, connection and relationship, I feel we share the same goals and being, you know, committed to this franchise and the greater good of Twins baseball and how he can make an impact, how he can learn the balance on what it takes to manage the team and then also help out in the community and, you know, the media relations component to it. And exciting time in my career, because I was once told that sooner or later you're going to be closer in age to the coaches and the manager than you will be with the players. The players keep getting younger, and mm-hmm. I'm kind of at that stage in my life where, yeah, I look at, we have a young coaching staff, and the players keep getting younger. So I'm looking forward to this group of coaches that are more my age, and they're young too. I mean, mm-hmm. we do have a young staff, but it's like a transitional period for me right now. And I've got 18, 19 years in the books here in baseball. And I talk about experience when I speak to some younger professionals that want to pursue this career. And you don't really understand what the value of experience is until you go through it.
So who would be your favorite player to work with, your top two guys?
Well, you know, there's just so many that I've dealt with over the years that really stand out. But, you know, there's one that challenged me on a lot of levels, and we connected on a lot of things. And Michael Kadire mm-hmm. was really a guy that he took an interest in what I did, and I took an interest in what he did. And we're exactly the same age. We're about 2 weeks apart. And really just those teams with the Twins, kind of 06 to 2010, really good teams. And, you know, he was a guy that there was a lot of superstars built around him. You know, there was mm-hmm. Joe Mauer and Justin Morneau and Joe Nathan and Johan Santana. It was a room filled with superstars. But Cuddy was kind of the guy that understood PR and was good at it and was able to stand up and speak and ultimately make me look good, because he always said the right things and always knew when it was time to speak up and when it was time to do some things in the community. And really, we just shared a special connection with our personal lives too, and getting married and having kids, and you know, just getting older. So, you know, Cuddy was a guy that stood out. Obviously, there's guys like Torrey Hunter that really were a ton of fun to work with because you never really knew what he was going to do or say, or you know, you keep a PR guy on his toes, like, hey, Torrey, settle down. And Justin Morneau, too, was a guy that my first year with the Twins, he wins the MVP in 2006. And, you know, how blessed am I that in my short career, in 03 I had an MVP, in 06 I have an MVP, Johan won the Cy Young. So that 06 team in general was really probably to date one of the highlights of my career because the team was really good. You know, just a magical end of that 06 season and the individual players on that team. And it's not just the superstars. It was the Nick Puntos of the world and, you know, Jason Bartlett's and just a really great team, fun coaches, great manager. The Metrodome was rocking that year. It was great, but the theme in my career is we were swept in the playoffs again. Yeah. So my tally right now in the postseason, I'm blessed to say I've made it to the postseason for 13 games, but I'm 0-13 in the postseason. So I've never won a game. I don't know what that's like. And I'm hoping that we change that this year.
Yeah, we might need to cut that out. We might need to cut that out of the podcast because we don't want to get that. We don't want that to get out. Without naming player, team, year, or anything like that, what is one of the most difficult situations that you had to deal with as a PR guy?
Well, I mean, you know, I have folders on my computer that there's, you know, baseball PR, business PR, community PR, concert PR, and then there's the crisis PR folder. And the crisis PR folder is something that, you know, unfortunately it's grown over the years with, you know, tragedies and arrests and deaths and, you know, ballpark incidents. And, you know, those are all things that you just have to be ready for at any time. And that was what I was talking about, being battle tested. But then there's just down in the trenches, the day-to-day work that, you know, you're around these players and these coaches. I mean, it's winning and losing affects attitudes, and it's not always great. I mean, we've had some, you know, 100 loss season in there. We've had some frustrating losses, some teams that look like they should have won it all that didn't. And there's some players that have come and gone that just didn't get it. They didn't respect, you know, everybody involved with what it takes to put on the show, you know, put on 81 games at home and 81 on the road. And everybody's role is important. Not everybody understands that.
So what do you mean by that?
Well, there's some moody players along the way that might tell you to get out of their area and quit bothering me and quit texting me or quit calling me. I'm not doing it. It doesn't happen very often, but, you know, every once in a while you have to, in my position, you have to learn each player's interests, their willingness to participate, what their, you know, kind of what their wheelhouse is. And I feel like I do a good job of identifying, you know, something, some similarity with each guy in that clubhouse, whether it's a family or a music connection. I try to build a little bit of a relationship outside of just always asking them to do something, because the demands on these players, they go so far and so deep that not everybody's going to be taken care of, you know, whether it's an autograph request or a meet and greet or a school visit or a hospital visit or really just to shake somebody's hand or take a picture. I mean, there's only so much time in the day, and these guys do have to prepare to play the game. And, you know, you got to realize when a guy's locked in, and it, dealing with some players that weren't longtime Twins, I mean, you realize that you don't bother that player 75 minutes before a game. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are locked in. They are doing whatever their routine is, and if you go up and talk to them, you are bothering them. Mm-hmm. And then there's players that, Eduardo Escobar, for example, one of the more fun players I have ever worked with, and he let me do everything and anything that we wanted that helped, you know, him, whether it was through social media or in-game entertainment. I mean, we had some fun with this guy. I mean, he was a natural. I knew if I put him in a position to succeed on camera, he was going to wow the fan base. And I think everybody fell in love with Eduardo. And they had a nice little group within that clubhouse, that core group. And Brian Dozier was a piece of that too. So Dozier and Escobar kind of became this pair that I could do some fun things with, and it was, you know, social media and Twitter and Instagram were kind of all the rage too the last couple of years, and they were down for whatever. So when you have guys like that will do some things and have interest in it, and if we do it right the first time and the rest of the players see the final product, it's kind of contagious. Then other guys are kind of whispering in my ear, like, "Hey, I'd like to do something like that. Can we maybe think about a way to do something with, you know, me and maybe this guy?" And all of a sudden, you got guys interested in doing things. So that's the reward, is when you do something right and other guys take notice. You did a good job when guys want to do stuff.
So has anybody else asked you to do the man cave and do a man cave show?
Well, that was something it sounds so just a little. I was laying in bed one night and thought, you know, we weren't having the greatest season, but we needed to come up with some content in the month of September. And, you know, Jake Cave, you kind of identify some personalities and some willingness to do some things and put themselves out there. And I thought it was really just a thought that came to me on, well, you know, Jake Cave, man cave. Maybe Jake could interview some teammates on what's in their man cave, and we could make it so bad it's good. And I pitched it to Jake, and he was like, I'm in. And then the goal was, okay, who are we going to talk to, and are they going to kind of play it up? And sure enough, it kind of took off. The first one was pretty good, and that is one of those situations where a few other guys were like, yeah, I'll go on the man cave show, and Jake played along really good. He kind of hammed it up a little bit, if you will, and it was a great little short bit, the mini episodes on our Twitter account that I think we ended up doing 5 of those shows late last year that. We joked about it. Season two. We might just have enough demand for a season two, and we'll see if Jake's down. We might start doing some of those in spring training. But you know, it's just identifying personalities and guys that want to do things. Now there's avenues for each guy to, whether it's a community event, a charity opportunity, a social opportunity. I mean, there's something for everybody, and that's what's fun right now. And PR, it's much more than just setting up interviews and doing game notes. I mean, it really is. Connecting with our fan base, fan engagements, fulfilling some of the players' interests and desires that, you know, listen, I think most players now know that it's not going to last forever. Their playing days are going to come and go, and what do they want to do, you know, after their career? So there's some broadcasting opportunities. Guys have taken more interest in what, you know, the guys do up in the booth. You've seen guys like Justin Morneau and Roy Smalley and Tim Laudner and Burt Blylevin's former players, you know, make good careers out of being in the booth. So, it's kind of my job also to identify who some of those guys are. And Glenn Perkins is another guy that's dabbled a little bit with some of these Facebook games that MLB's doing. And you just try to connect the dots for guys and be much more than just their PR guy, but be somebody that takes interest in their careers and opportunities and use your network to potentially line up a guy with an opportunity.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show today. If you like this show or any other of our shows, make sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you want to read stories written by our guests, you can do that on www.linkly.com. Don't forget to sign up for our weekly newsletter so you don't miss any of these stories. Make sure to check out our social pages. We have them all. Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. If you have any suggestions for our show, please write us on Facebook. I'm Corey Koski, and you've been listening to How I Got Here from Linkly. Special thanks to Wade Beavers and our friends at the restaurant Agriculture.